Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. On today's show, we'll hear an interview with Professor Gada Talhami to discuss the early 2009 crisis in Gaza and the response of Chicagoans to that crisis. The following interview was recorded on Saturday, January 10th, 2009. We are joined on the phone with Professor Gada Talhami. Professor Talhami is the D.K. Pearson's Professor of Politics Emerita in Comparative Politics at Lake Forest College outside of Chicago, Illinois. And Professor Talhami is joining us on the phone from the Chicago area. Professor Talhami, it's an honor and a pleasure, and thank you very much, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You study comparative politics and also with a focus on what's been going on in the Middle East. We are recording this interview on Saturday, January 10th. And since December 26th, 2006, we have seen that if you were to watch CNN or the major American media, that there's been something going on in the Middle East, that Israel has apparently been attacked by rockets from Hamas, and that Israel is responding back in a rather strict, perhaps brutal fashion. If this is at all possible, can you summarize maybe in a brief two or three sentence summary if this is a correct assessment, and if not, what's actually been happening?
This is not a correct assessment. This is merely the usual way of the American media adopting the Israeli viewpoint. The American media in general rarely makes an effort to reach Palestinians and to hear to Palestinian voices. What is at stake here is the definition of aggression. That is, the American media and the Israelis define aggression as something that has begun with the launching of rockets. In truth, this is merely a reaction to a lot of injustices and aggression on the Israeli side. The Israelis quickly tell you they evacuated Gaza. They left Gaza in 2006. Well, they never really left, because Gaza was surrounded by air, by land, and by sea, and the Israelis acted as the complete masters of the situation, capable of squeezing Gaza at will whenever they wished. And the only way the Gazans were able to retaliate were through their system of tunnels by which they received provisions of all kinds, and by launching very inaccurate, hapless missiles, rockets, which actually lacked the guidance system, so they could fall anywhere without any significance.
And there's also a matter here kind of related of that of something of a sanctions regime that's been going on. Is that correct?
Who's sanctioned?
Hasn't Israel been involved in sanctions against Gaza of some sort?
Yeah, well, I mean, Gaza has been, in a way, isolated, has been, in a way, bombarded. There have been the cutoff of food and provisions to Gaza has been at the will of the Israelis. So the Israelis have all the means of simply stopping supplies from the outside. Gaza is isolated. You know where it sits. It is actually surrounded by the Israeli border and the Egyptian border and the sea. So they can't really do anything or move anywhere. This is really the worst situation of any part of the West Bank under occupation.
I see. There's, since this situation has emerged, I was kind of struck, and the first thought that struck to me was the timing of the situation. Not only when it occurred during, for what a lot of Americans would be, a time of rest and vacation. It happened the day after Christmas, right on the week of there being a New Year's holiday. And so a lot of people are taking that time off on vacation from their job, for example. And also there's the matter in other faiths of it coinciding with times around other holidays, in Hanukkah and Ramadan. But there are also, so that kind of struck me as a peculiarity, but there are also two other related factors, that of an upcoming Israeli election, and also the fact that the Bush presidency is going to end when Barack Obama is inaugurated on January 20th, 2009. Why, do you have any sense of why the timing of this has been happening as it is?
I think it's very clever timing on the part of the Israelis. I think looking at Israel's record of their relations with the U.S., you will note two things. Number one, the Israelis never do anything without United States approval. I mean, I've studied this issue over and over again. Number two, they time much of their action around American elections or periods of lull in American activity when there's actually no motion in the American political scene. Yeah, they're looking now at a very narrow window of opportunity with the Bush administration about to sign off. And this administration has been the best of supporters for them in the sense that Mr. Bush, in a sense, has approved the settlements, actually has referred to the settlements as population centers. He has had a great relationship with Sharon before Sharon's illness.
Ariel Sharon, you mean?
Yeah.
Former Prime Minister of Israel.
Right. Mm-hmm. And had a great relationship with Cheney, with Vice President Cheney. Second thing we have to think of is the imminence of an Israeli election, whereby Israeli leaders, both from the Kadima party and from the Likud party, are vying for popular attention. And the way in which Israeli leaders attain popular attention is by flexing their muscles on their various Arab fronts. And now they have to deal with erasing the disappointment and shame of their failures in Lebanon, in the Lebanon campaign. Mm. So it is important to appear masculine and to appear like capable of delivering a terrible blow to Palestinians. I'm saying this on the basis that I don't think the Hamas rockets were such a danger to Israel. I think Israel could have dealt with that diplomatically. It could have dealt with that even in a very minor military reaction. But they chose this campaign, which really we should recognize as a campaign of shock and awe, in order not only to frighten their Arab enemies, which they do all the time, but also it's a psychological campaign to convince their own public that the military solution is the only solution, and that the use of overwhelming force is the only way in which you deal with Arab enemies. And that, of course, erases all the lessons of Israel's relations with the Arab world. Thirdly, I must point out that there's another imminent election, which will probably be taking place soon, for the presidency of the Palestinian Authority, because the term of office of Mahmoud Abbas is about to be over. And if this is followed by general elections whereby everybody will participate, it is possible that perhaps Hamas people may win a majority in the Legislative Council, and probably if there's a wide election in both parts of the West Bank and Gaza, maybe there's a Hamas person who will win the presidency, or the presidency will devolve on somebody who is less conciliatory towards the Israelis, as Mahmoud Abbas has been. So you're looking at really three elections, the American, the Palestinian, and the Israelis, and you're looking at the fact that the Israelis sensed a long time ago that their battle with Iran, the attack on Iran, which they really wanted to execute quite a few months ago, isn't going to happen now that Barack Obama has been elected, because he has made it very clear that he's going to move for a diplomatic option with Iran.
Going back to the matter regarding the origins of what's been happening in Gaza since December 26th, the rationale that you routinely hear from the major media in the United States has been that of rockets that have been fired by Hamas into Israel, and Israel is defending itself. There are two things that's kind of suspicious about this rationale, at least in my mind, and I wanted to hear what you thought about this. One is that, and you can actually find a page on Wikipedia that's actually a compilation of rocket attacks into Israel since throughout all the year of 2008, compiled from the Israeli media themselves. And they tend to be like not firings from Hamas, but by these rather small, kind of marginal groups that are that feel like they have no resort but violence, and so they try to act, but they tend to be quite small. They tend to be quite marginal, and they tend to, and in these number of instances, and this is my second point, that Hamas has in these over this course of these rocket firings has denounced these rocket firings and has tried to seek other nonviolent measures, perhaps diplomatic measures, to try to reduce these rocket firings into Israel and to try to maintain a peaceful posture. What do you think about this assessment? Am I on the right mark, or what do you think?
I think you are. I think Hamas technically had declared a ceasefire until recently. There was technically a ceasefire on both sides. Hamas, however, was unable off and on to control other groups in Gaza, like Jihad Islami, from resorting to rocket firing. And the rocket firing was a measure of last resort in order to relieve the siege of Gaza in the absence of any kind of movement on the diplomatic front. Remember, what the American media never brings out, probably what Wikipedia will never bring out, is the fact that there is a position by Hamas on ceasefires. Hamas has always said, we are willing to accept a truce over a 10-year period with Israel, a truce, not a final peace. And then we will see what happens. In other words, this will be a conditional period in which if both sides showed good faith, maybe we can negotiate with them. So Hamas really has never closed off the possibility of a truce. Ideologically, this has been worked in their own rhetoric all the time. Somehow we seem to ignore this here. This is really nothing new in between Hamas and between the Israelis. This rocket firing has been going on off and on. It's merely an annoyance for the Israelis, no more. And it's merely a reminder to them that, look, you've got to do something about removing the siege of Gaza. The siege of Gaza is killing us. Remember, immediately before December 26, the Gazans were literally starving. United Nations groups were saying that there's no food coming in because the crossing points are being closed, because the Egyptians and the Israelis conspired together to prevent the arrival of food shipments. So now, finally, this horrible bombardment of Gaza has really, really raised the ante, because you're really bombarding a starving population, a population that has been starving for quite a while. It is really no different than the way in which the United States administration and Britain maintained a 10-year siege of Iraq, literally preventing humanitarian supplies and much-needed food of going in, and then following this up by the campaign of shock and awe. So it's an old strategy. First, you deprive the population of any means of survival when they really lacked fuel, when they lacked food, when they lacked everything else, and then you hit them hard with overwhelming military power.
To this response, at least as far as nonviolent actions are concerned, across the world, and especially here in Chicago, and this has actually also reached, I'm happy to say, within the corridors of the mainstream media themselves, that you have seen repeated and ever-growing protests, certainly in Chicago, with regards to what's been going on here, and that has been what's been going on regarding Israel and Gaza. And that's kind of struck me as not only an extraordinary development, but also that's been one that may be able to play a role. I have some questions about this. One is, can you give us a sense of what that protest situation has been like in Chicago and nationwide?
First of all, I think we must realize that Palestinian groups and Arab groups, particularly Palestinians, have been involved in the anti-Iraq war movement for quite a while now. So there have been alliances forged with the anti-war movement. Now, the anti-war movement has been focused on Iraq, but in many of these marches, you would have seen Palestinian flags displayed and sometimes Palestinian slogans. That is, we have learned over the years, certainly the second generation of Palestinian Americans have learned, that the only way we can project our cause in this country is to forge alliances with the peace movement, with the specific deprived communities, in order to, and certainly with the Jewish Peace Front, in order to make a dent in this media silence which surrounds the Palestinian issue. What you're seeing here is a grand coalition of all kinds of groups, okay, an organization called ANSWER, anti-war groups, black groups, Christian groups. You see Christian churches, representatives of Arab Christian churches. We have seen somebody called Father Dahdal, who is a priest of the Greek Orthodox Church in Chicago. You would think he would have nothing to do with Hamas. It's an Islamic group. But this is basically a revolt against the excessive human toll that's being paid by Gaza. This is a way of saying this is a Holocaust. And indeed, this is the first time you hear the word Holocaust being mentioned and used by various groups without evoking the reaction that we used to hear before, which used to say, no, you're exaggerating. This term only applies to the Jewish experience. Secondly, I think this is a reaction to this silence of the media, which simply either parrots the Israeli line over and over and over again, or if it ever wants to give a small room for the airing of Palestinian views, it will use a small harmless story which emphasizes the human aspect of the conflict, not necessarily the political aspect. We have seen a story by a woman 2 days ago in the Tribune, in the editorial page, who is describing what it felt like speaking over the phone with her grandmother in Gaza and hearing the bombing and the noise in the background and what that felt like. Well, that doesn't really pack much of a political message. It does say a little bit about the fact that Palestinians are suffering. But the Tribune, being an establishment paper, and many others, simply refuse to allow room for the expression of political views of Palestinians as opposed to simply a humanitarian stories. And this is a weird thing that bothered me for many years, and that is in a country where there is no censorship laws, unlike the Middle East where we really can't write what we want. Here, there are no censorship laws. What strikes me is the fact that much of the media, which of course is corporate media, sort of exercises self-censorship. They simply don't want to print things they don't want to see in print. And if they ever give you room to say and express your political views, I mean, I've been part of this in the Tribune. Now I refuse to write to the Tribune. I will wait till they invite me to write, and then I sit back helplessly and watch them giving so-called, quote-unquote, equal time to the other side, to the Israeli voices, as though the Israeli voices have not been given equal time, not with Charles Krauthammer, not with Ron Grossman, not with those people regularly appearing on the editorial pages of papers like the Tribune. So, yeah, there is a tremendous disgust on the part of the disaffected sectors of the Chicago community with the role of the media. A terrible unhappiness with the role of the media.
And in the wake of this media unhappiness, to use a term, you're seeing, as we had talked about before, massive protests that are basically crystallizing with regards to this, and probably that around the country. And I'd like you to tell me what you think about this. It seems like that we may have, and this might be over-optimistic about me, let me know if that is, we may have turned a corner of sorts, that it seems like where we don't see this situation about Israel is basically having the be-all, end-all as far as conversations about this in the major media, and especially where you're seeing these enormous and growing protests that have been taking place, that it seems like maybe we may have turned a corner, and that the situation, at least in the United States, is concerned in its perception and in how people react about this, may have changed, and perhaps in a way that you can't really change back. Am I over-optimistic about this, or what do you think?
No, I think you are on the mark. I think you are optimistic, and this is justifiable. We have turned the corner in regards to perhaps the popular elements in the United States. Perhaps there has been some acceptance of the Palestinian viewpoint among the popular masses, not within the establishment, not within Republican ranks, not within anti-Islamic groups, because these are still there. So-called establishment groups, the establishment media, are still very, very much pro-Israeli. I mean, I'm reminded here also by a very perceptive remark by Noam Chomsky a few years ago. He said it's not AIPAC, which really has always supported Israel only. It's really American liberals. American liberalism has always been infatuated with Israel, with viewing Israel as a great human experiment, completely being oblivious, shutting their eyes to the cost that Israel has meant to the Palestinian people in particular, and perhaps to the region in general. I think those elements are still in place. But I think I agree with you, we will never go back to a period when the Palestinian issue is completely unrecognizable in the public consciousness of the United States. I think we have made it, at least in academia, at least among peace groups, among Jewish peace groups, among Afro-American groups, among gay groups. A lot of gay groups came out with us in many of the demonstrations. I'm very proud of that. We have certainly turned the corner in that we can never now claim that we don't know this. And you see, what's driving this, I think, is finally a sense of guilt that you sense on the part of Americans. In other words, it's something I bring up in all of my talks. Hey, listen, I say to people, what is happening in Gaza, what is happening in the Middle East is happening on your watch. So you can't tell me, you Americans of the beginning of the 21st century, that you didn't know. It is not like Germans who said we didn't know about the Nazi camps. You do know. This war is being fought with your weapons, with your consent, with your government's consent. The children and women in Gaza, one-third of the casualties are civilians, according to UN statistics, who have been killed in Gaza, are being killed in your name. And that's what history will record. This will never be actually erased. Yeah, I think we have turned a corner, but there is still a lot more work to do to convince the liberal establishment, which I think represents Mr. Obama. I think Mr. Obama represents that liberal establishment. To my mind, he's not so radical. And you haven't yet really made a dent in certain Republican ranks, which have become extremely anti-Arab, extremely anti-Islamic in the post-September 11 period. We have still huge, huge areas to conquer in the United States before we really bring this matter to the forefront of what Americans should really worry about.
And that actually leads me to my next question, that while it seems like that among the general population, among peace activists and other groups concerned with social justice have made this part of their operational work and regular thinking, that for something like what's going on in Gaza to stop and for something involving a peace to take place, that we've got to impact policy, mm-hmm. or people have to impact policy. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess there's a way to be able to cross that disconnect, mm-hmm. but what do you foresee as being the way, not only the way in which that disconnect can be crossed, but how long do you think that disconnect will take to cross?
It may take a while. That is unless we really sustain these demonstrations and these public actions, not unless we make sure Americans know that America is isolated in this. Public opinion all over the world is anti-Israeli. The Israelis are shaken by this. If you see Israel representatives in the U.S. in Chicago speaking on television, they are really shaken by the depth of the anger that is overtaking Chicago and overtaking the world. That's what we have to push. I think we eventually, if we sustain this public effort, we may be able to make a dent in the new administration. We may be able to turn ourselves into something like the anti-Vietnam movement and the anti-Iraq movement. I think eventually the turnover in the attitude of the Obama people towards Iraq has certainly been influenced by what was happening on the street, at the street level. Nobody can ignore that. Now, I have to add something. My experience has been, and I lived in the United States since about 50 years ago, my experience has been that for Palestinians and Palestinian issues to make an impact or a dent in the heavy armor of the pro-Israel politics of this country, Palestinians have to die in large numbers. This is really horrible to say, but this has been my experience. That is, in a way, the American public have been inured to Palestinian suffering. They take it for granted because Palestinians have been portrayed as barbarians. They have been portrayed as terrorists. And in the post-September 11 climate, the charge of terrorism certainly packs a great emotional appeal among Americans, and it scares people. And the accusation of terrorism, the accusation of barbarism, the accusation of Islamism, which have been deftly manipulated, not only by pro-Israel groups, but very conservative racist groups within this country are still there and have certainly made an impact. And I'm afraid we may have to see something like the suffering of Jenin. Remember Jenin?
Yes.
We have to see the suffering of Gaza. We have to see all of these compiled together before people will really remember that something is wrong in this relationship between United States and Israel. And I must add that also another group we ignored who have been very supportive of Palestinians over the years, not only because of this latest Gaza crisis, have been mainline Christian churches in the U.S. I will exclude the Catholic Church here because the position of the Catholic Church worldwide has been really excellent. The position of the American Catholic Church has been very silent, very unwilling to open up, to listen to the grievances of Palestinians, particularly Palestinian Christians, who any time there's a crisis in American-Palestinian relations, Palestinian and Arab Christians suffer. There's a real backlash that really affects Palestinian Christians and Arab Christians. Mainline Christian groups in this country, within the National Council of Churches, have been very supportive over the years, very open to Palestinians, willing to listen. And by the way, taking a great deal of flack from pro-Israel groups who accuse them of anti-Semitism, etc., etc. So, yeah, there have been tremendous improvement over the past 10 years, I would say. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And I'm afraid this will have to come at the cost of more and more civilian Palestinian casualties.
Let me talk a little bit about what we think might happen maybe in the short term, especially in the wake of the beginning of an Obama administration and elections in both Israel and Palestine. I could see this as a situation, and tell me what you think about this, that let's say that around January 20th, when Barack Obama is inaugurated, that Israel could back off from what it's doing in Gaza. And that could lead to a reduction in the series of protests that we've seen in Chicago and nationwide and really worldwide with regards to this. And that reduction might mean that less pressure is brought to bear and that the situation regarding Israeli and U.S. policy regarding the Middle East kind of restores back. Do you see this as a possibility that it could... that this continued growth might subside because of Israeli or U.S. actions in the short term?
It might, but I don't foresee that movement on the American front. I think we're still unaware of where Hillary Clinton stands. We do know that she has been historically linked to pro-Israel groups. We do know that she sympathizes with the Israeli viewpoint. I don't know where you could balance her viewpoints with Obama's pragmatism, and that's all I'm willing to say for him. I think he's going to be a pragmatist leader rather than a progressive leader. And pragmatism decrees that he cannot ignore what's going on the Palestinian front. That is not if he is really concerned with bringing the Iraqi conflict to a close and with improving his relations with the Muslim world, since he's been promising us that he's going to deliver a major speech to the Muslim world as soon as he takes office. So I don't think the situation will improve that drastically with the Obama administration. I think what the most that you're going to see is perhaps the appointment of special envoys to the Arab-Israeli situation. Two names have been mentioned in the media. One of them is the appointment of Martin Indyk, a former American ambassador to Israel, and Dennis Ross, who figured largely in the Oslo peace talks. Both of them, of course, are of a Jewish background, of pro-establishment background, and I don't think there is much that could be hoped out of their appointment, just in the same vein in which the Bush administration lulled certain sectors to sleep by appointing Tony Blair as special envoy to the West Bank. Well, we do know this was a consolation prize because he was denied the presidency of the World Bank. Number two, all he has done really so far is to try and get investors in Europe to invest in the West Bank economy. He really never paid attention to political issues. What United States needs to do are many, many, many things in order to bring this situation to a reasonable, I wouldn't say conclusion, because this is really a historical struggle, but to a reasonable situation of cessation of hostilities. The United States and the Obama administration must come to terms with the issue of settlements on the West Bank by, for the first time in the history of the U.S., insisting on a deadline for the removal of the settlers. The United States has criticized settlements. Condoleezza Rice has criticized settlements off and on. What had never been done is to face the Israelis with a deadline of removing those settlements, containing them, doing something about them. There's never been a time deadline. Number two, there need to be a recognition of the fact that you have to talk with Hamas. This is not beyond the honor of the United States. The United States has talked secretly and publicly with various volatile Islamic groups in the past. And it can and it should deal with Hamas forthrightly in order to listen to their complaints and in order to do something about the humanitarian crisis of Gaza. Essentially, what the United States has to deal with is really the humanitarian situation of Gaza, being literally a people in a vise, people isolated in a small tip of southern Israel that cannot move anywhere. This situation is horrible. It's going to be explosive at any time in the future. Even if you remove Hamas, incidentally, even if you have Fatah in Gaza, the situation doesn't bode well for the Palestinians in Gaza. I just want to remind you that when Yasser Arafat was on relatively good terms with the Israelis in the post-Oslo period when he was returned to Gaza, they would never allow him control of the Gaza airport. That's really under Israeli control. Everything is under Israeli control. All the entrance points to Gaza are under Israeli control. No one can live with this. Now, supposedly the Obama administration began to make conciliatory moves, and the anti-war movement, the peace movement, sort of rested for a while and went back home. We still have the capacity, I think, to recall all this to the streets as soon as there is a tremendous flare-up of hostilities between Palestinians and between Israelis, because it'll always be along the lines of what we have seen, overwhelming power on the side of the Israelis and overwhelming casualties on the side of Palestinians. That equation will always be there, and that equation is a recipe for disaster for any U.S. administration, unless they really choose to go to the roots of the problem.
We've been speaking with Professor Ghada Talhami, the D.K. Pearson's Professor of Politics Emerita and Comparative Politics at Lake Forest College outside of Chicago, and who has been talking to us about what's been going on in Israel, Gaza, and the Middle East. Professor Talhami, thank you again.
Thank you.
That was an interview with Professor Ghada Talhami, recorded on January 10th, 2009. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.